It's time for Sounding Off with Phil Goff.
Morena, Mayor Phil Goff, how are you this morning?
Morena, I'm very well, thank you. Rachel and yourself?
Good. It is nice to see some rain outside. We are going to talk about the water crisis because it's been a year since we've been in water restrictions in Tamaki Makaurau. We'll also talk a little bit about the budget, which is going to be announced by the government this week and what that might mean for Auckland. I first wanted to get your comments on an article that was published on RNZ by Justin Lateef, who is a local democracy reporter. And this is coming off the back of Christine Fletcher, former mayor and long-serving councillor, who has claimed that you are inclined to run the council as a bit of a boys' club at times. That's her quote. Now, what's your response to this?
Well, my response to that is that's a political comment by somebody that ran against me at the last election. And her vote was the only dissenting vote on my nomination of the chair of the planning committee to go on the light rail establishment unit. And if you look at the facts, and you know that's not true. If you take the council-controlled organisations, we're announcing today, I think, four new members of the Panuku council-controlled organisation board. Three are women, one are men. Two of those women are Maori, one is Pacifica. Chosen not because they're women, Maori and Pacifica, but because they were the best applicants. The two biggest of our council-controlled organisations, Watercare and Auckland Transport Board, both have a woman chair, and they have a majority of women on those boards. 50% of the chairs of our main committees, chairs and vice chairs, are women. Women are now 43% of our councillors. That was 35%. It'll be good if there's a roughly 50-50 split. 9 out of 20 of the councillors.
In that vein, how is the council working to ensure that there's diversity? Because as you say, it's important to be appointing people on merit, but you know we do have to make some room for the conversation to be had about how there is disparity in people's access to these spaces sometimes. How does the council ensure that we do have diversity of gender and also ethnicity in council-run facilities?
Well, in terms of the elected representatives, of course, that's entirely up to the electorate. But if you look at the elected representatives, as I said, 9 out of 20 of the councillors are women. 78 out of 149 of the local board members are women, so more than half.
But in these council-appointed positions, how does that happen?
No, the council-appointed positions, well, I've just run through a whole lot of those with the council-controlled organisations. We do control the nature of the people appointed to that. And, of course, we want our boards, we want our council, and we want our committees to be representative of the community that we do represent. So you want to have diversity in gender and diversity in ethnicity. And to a significant degree, we've made big progress on that, with one exception, and I think there's an underrepresentation of Maori on the council governing body and probably on the local boards as well. And that's why I think that when we get the opportunity in 2025, we will create a Maori ward, just as we have Maori electorate seats, to ensure that we have got that representation and that diversity on our council.
Now, the 2025 date is quite far off. We have seen all these changes from Nanaia Mahuta, rolled through, and we're seeing a lot of Māori wards established across the country. Is there any way to bring it further forward, or do we have to wait until that 2025 space?
The reason we have to wait for that is because the government, there's two things that we wanted. We wanted, to be able not to spend $1 million on a referendum every time we made a change in representation regarding Māori. We don't have to have referenda on any other changes that we make electorally. But the second thing is, at the moment, the law singles out Auckland as the only city where there is a cap on the number of councillors. And if we were to create a Māori ward now, we would have to drop a general ward. We would have to realign every boundary for every ward, and that would take it out of alignment with the local board boundaries, which no councillor thinks is desirable. And Nanaia Mahuta has indicated to us that in legislation later this year, she will allow us she'll remove the cap on the members so that we can create an additional Maori ward without having to disrupt every other ward across the city. And so that unfortunately won't come into effect until close to the election next year. So it'll be the following election before there would be a Maori ward established. But the current council is definitely determined that that should happen and that there should be Māori representation on council.
Well, thinking about central government, let's talk a bit about the budget, which is going to be announced this week. This is the budget for 2021. We've seen some indications that obviously it's going to be a response to COVID and the ongoing effects of COVID on the country and the economy. But we're also hearing it's going to be a well-being budget still, which is something that this government's talked about in the last term and also in this term. What are your hopes for how Auckland might benefit from what the government has indicated that they may be spending on in this new year?
Well, I guess the three priorities for council, as always, are transport, housing and the environment. I'm hoping that with the signalled Housing Acceleration Fund of $3.8 billion, we'll get some indication in the budget of how much of that money for housing infrastructure will come to Auckland. And we think there's, we're looking for a fair proportion. But given that the housing costs and problems in Auckland are disproportionate, I'd want that to be a big slice of money to Auckland so that we can put the infrastructure in and continue to build houses at the pace that we're building them at the moment. So those three areas are important. Environment, I think it's the climate change stuff. There's only so much the council can do about climate change, and we know that 43% of our emissions come from transport. So we've got to have some incentive to bring forward the electrification of our car fleet. Now, that will happen anyway beginning in 2030 because car manufacturers across the world will be phasing out the production of petrol and diesel cars by that point. But let's get ahead of the curve if we can. So I'm hoping that there'll be something in that field. But the other things are the things that I think all of us are concerned about, that we get the COVID recovery right and that that's properly funded, that we improve our health system, that we try to ramp up our skill training so we're not relying on continued supply of skills through migrants, but we are giving skills to our own people and assisting the most vulnerable, and particularly poverty. And poverty relates to housing costs, frankly, in Auckland, so that comes back to housing again.
With this emphasis on well-being, that has been something that, has been quite a big conversation internationally as well. There are a lot of people looking at New Zealand to see how a well-being budget, especially in this post-COVID, space that we're sort of in at the moment, what do you think that might look like in terms of how we see funds distributed? I know this is kind of speculation at this point, but I'm interested to hear your opinion on it.
We're allowed to put forward our wish lists, and I'm not breaching any budget secrets because I don't know what's in the budget. But what we do know about COVID is that it's disproportionately affected employment for Māori and Pacifica. Overall, our unemployment, we should be celebrating across New Zealand, I think it's 4.7. At the beginning of the pandemic, we were economists were talking about 10 to 20%. So we've done a whole lot better. But we need to look at those that have been disproportionately affected by COVID, and we want to make sure that everybody has the ability to achieve to their potential in New Zealand. And if we have our kids coming out of school unskilled and not able to get jobs that have decent wages so they can support their families on it, that's really bad. We want to encourage kids to get skilled, and that's why I hope that that there'll be an ongoing pressure in that area of upskilling our young people so that they can pick up those skilled jobs, they can earn decent money, they won't be reliant on benefits or additional support, and they can achieve to their potential. So I think all of those things, Rachel, are really important.
Well, let's just very briefly talk about water, because it is something we've talked about a lot over the last year, but it has been a year now since we've seen water restrictions here in Tamaki Makaurau. We've obviously seen new supply brought in, which has helped alleviate some of the supply issues. But what's it going to mean for us looking into the future as a city? We're not seeing the water restrictions lift anytime soon. How are we getting more sustainable in our practices to make sure that it's not just let's just get more water into the city, but how do we use the water we've got more safely and effectively?
Yeah, well, first of all, let's look at the restrictions. They're pretty minor and they're not really affecting many residents. Yeah, you can't use a sprinkler or you can't use a hose without a trigger nozzle on it. And not many people at the moment are out there watering their garden or using sprinklers on their garden. But making us more resilient is really important. We've now had three drier than normal years. Two of them were drought years. And normally our lakes would be 76% full at this time of the year. Currently they're 50, the latest figures this morning, 50.18% full. So, yeah, we're 26% below where we'd normally be. If we hadn't have brought in the water resilience and the water and the encouragement to conserve water, we'd be on 30% now and we'd be in real trouble. What we've done is we've invested nearly $250 million in boosting the city's water supply, so that by the end of this year we'll be producing through new water treatment plants already built in Papakura, Pukekohe, and we're finalising the water treatment plant at Tuakau. We'll be adding another 100 million litres a day to the city's water supply. But just as importantly, By making people conscious of the need not to waste water, we as Aucklanders have saved over 17 billion litres of water, which is phenomenally good. We have a lower rate of per person consumption of water than any other part of New Zealand, and we're not suffering hardship because of that. We're just doing sensible things.
So is this
that
something that
we
you
took for granted?
Is this something that you think we're going to take as a lesson out of this, and hopefully just make it the new normal going forward? Is that what the goal is, I guess, through this education?
Yeah, we really want to build in those good habits that we've created, not only with residents but also with businesses. And the businesses, I think, the saving measures, for example, the other day I opened a new bore, or a regenerated bore at Eden Park. They were using 16 million litres of purified water a year to water the fields. Now they're not using any purified water. I symbolically turned off the valve on the water main, and they're just using water bores. Now, a lot of construction industries are now using non-potable water rather than water out of the water mains, which is purified water. You know, why do we go to all the expense of cleaning the quality of our water simply to use it to mix concrete and settle dust? So that didn't make sense. And the other thing that WaterCare has done is that they have... We've lifted their capital budget quite considerably, and they have improved the leakage. They've stopped a lot of natural leakages in aging water pipes, and that in itself has saved about 6.4 million litres a day. So there's some good things there. We've made it easier for people to install rainwater tanks. I don't use water from the water mains. I've simply got water off the roof of my home and the buildings on my farm, and we're totally self-sufficient in water. Now, I'm not expecting everybody to do that, but if you can save the rainwater off your roof and stop it going down and overflowing the stormwater drains when it rains heavily, then you can use that water to water your garden or to fill your toilet system and things like that. But so there's some good measures that we're continuing to build upon that will keep us with a safe supply of water, even though we've had a probably unusually dry drought.
Very much climate change associated. Well, thank you very much for your time this morning, Mayor Phil Goff. It's always great to have you on the show. We'll talk to you again next Tuesday.
Look forward to it, Rachel. Ka kite.
Ka kite.
That was Sounding Off with Phil Goff.
Thank you.